Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Tech Talks powered by Shopline in association with ICBC and MJ BizCon. I'm Mary Jane Gibson, and I'm here with Brett Harris, the founder, president, and CEO of LoveBuds LLC.
Thank you, Mary Jane. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
So glad to meet you and talk with you about your pretty incredible business. So tell us what LoveBuds LLC is. I know you are front of house cannabis dispensary product.
Yes. Yeah, so, I created LoveBuds really as a tax hedge for dispensaries because of 280E.
Which, for those who don't know, is the tax law that adversely affects any cannabis business because of how
the federal government sees every dispensary as a trafficker of illegal narcotics. And so because of that, they're only allowed to write off their cost of goods. And I'm from Denver originally. At the time that cannabis became legal, I lived in California. But being from Denver, a lot of my friends got licenses. And when I would go home, I was a business analyst after I sold a business. I came back and I would analyze their companies. And I was sort of shocked by the margins and the business model. But 280E kept coming up. Like, they had this huge tax problem that they were being taxed on their gross instead of their net profit because they couldn't make standard write-offs. And I was thinking to myself, like, but what if they sold things that weren't cannabis? Like, they'd have to allow them to take tax write-offs for that. And I was right. If they did 10% of their business were non-cannabis, then the government would allow them to write off 10% of their, overhead, their rent, their electricity, and all that stuff. So really, LoveBuds was developed as a hedge, a tax hedge. And then it's also a very profitable business. And I always felt that every dispensary should be its own head shop. You know, like that, like early on in Colorado, when it first started, there was just like two glass cases and a couple really colorful people, seven strains, and that's all they were selling. And they weren't selling lighters. They weren't selling rolling papers. And I just thought that was strange because they all had sales tax licenses. They should sell everything, right? So that was originally it was a consignment business, started in my guest bedroom, was where I kept all my inventory. And it just kind of grew and grew, and more states legalized. And now I think we're probably sell about 30% of all the dispensaries in the United States. So everything from rolling papers to bongs to pipes and batteries and e-rigs and anything else the kids want, we provide.
And I just learned that this has led to you having a great nickname bestowed on you very recently, which is King Bong.
King Bong, yes.
I mean, that's pretty great.
Yeah, I introduced myself as the largest bong dealer in America. That's pretty much my introduction. What do you do for a living? I sell more bongs, yes. We sell a lot of bongs.
I'm sure Tommy Chong would be very happy. Do you know Tommy Chong?
Actually, Tommy did a commercial for us a couple of months ago. I don't know him well, but I just being in this business long enough, like, I mean, I've been in this business 13 years, like, you meet Snoop and you meet Tommy Chong and you meet Tyson and you meet all those guys. And it's a fun walking around the show and seeing the guys that I started in the industry with. And not everyone's still here, but there's a lot of guys still here, a lot of new people in and out. So it's fun always to come, just a sort of a homecoming week as well.
Yeah.
Biz, yeah.
And to think of Tommy Chong as, you know, someone who actually did time for selling glass pieces, which was how the feds managed to get him, was on the paraphernalia.
That's exactly right.
Piece of it all.
When he got off, I started my company.
That's so you've got the long view of the cannabis industry. How are you feeling about it as you've seen it go through so many shifts and, you know, three administrations at this point with the legalization? What are your thoughts on how it exists right now and what you hope for it in the next few years?
I would say that our industry is a little bit sick right now, right? There's ebbs and flows to every industry, and we're at a trough period where it's, I think only the strong are going to survive. I think, you know, I'm used to selling independent mom and pop stores, and that part of the business is starting to go away. It's being owned by these big companies, MSOs or regional chains. And also all of these MSOs, regional chains, have taken on a lot of debt. So the industry is sort of at a precipice now where, A, you got to get really lean, got to get really, really strong. And also, you know, everyone's waiting for that glimmer of hope of some sort of legislation that's going to tipped the scales positive. And, you know, I mean, and you, some might argue that this THC, this hemp ban, might be positive for legal cannabis. It depends on how you look at it. Some people are really upset by it. Some people are really excited by it.
I think that's really interesting. Can you talk about that reframe?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you know, in Texas, cannabis is illegal, right? For the most part, right? They've got a couple of dispensaries, but you could get intoxicating hemp products from anywhere, and that was totally legal. And that product in a legal state could wipe out the legal cannabis business, right? So in states where you had intoxicating hemp and legal cannabis, that was a huge conflict of interest. And right, for those states that are making money on the legalized cannabis side and not making money on the intoxicating hemp side, that was a big issue. And I think it was a big enough issue that it made it to where it made it. And now I think, I do think that in the intoxicating hemp is probably going to go away. I think there's enough lobbyists and enough strong people to keep the seltzers and the alcohol replacement business existing. But you never know. And I think, you know, this particular administration needs to pull voters from the other side. And I think he's got an opportunity to legalize cannabis or at least reschedule. Who knows? That could have been the precursor to that. You never know. I I've been in this business so long, and everyone's always been waiting for good news, and it's never come. So I just wake up every day and put on my pants and go to work and do the best that we can every day and try to come up with innovative ideas to grow my business and stay profitable. And we've managed to grow for 11 straight years and be profitable 11 straight years. And that's, we're all looking forward to those good things happening, but I don't think counting on them is a good idea.
Speaking of changing things in your business as you evolve and grow, you were just talking about some shifting happening at your company. Are you able to talk about that and what you're looking at going forward?
Sure. I mean, you know, as companies evolve and grow, you know, the founder of the company's role changes, right? There was a time that I was the buyer and the sales manager and the controller and head salesperson, and you know, and like, and you know, now that's sort of progressed, and we've been seeking a chief revenue officer for about 6 months now, and we had an interview today. We'll have another interview tomorrow, and I flew them in from wherever they flew in from. I thought, you know, and not everybody can come from the inside the industry, right? Like the things that we want to do are more commonly done in other verticals. Neither of these finalists this time are from the cannabis space. And I think the cannabis space needs people to come from outside the industry because there is a tinge of sophistication that's missing from an industry that's maturing. And people from the outside have that know-how and they know how to do it. And certainly there are things that these candidates at least are better than me at. And it's time for me to move over and let somebody else handle that aspect. You know, I don't run our books anymore, thank God. And I don't run our operations anymore, thank God. And now it's time for me to hand over the revenue aspect of the business. And maybe we found the person, maybe we haven't, we'll see.
Do you feel like we're witnessing a sort of almost generational shift in the cannabis industry now that we're at a decade plus of legalization functioning or not functioning in so many ways that it's sort of really like it feels like a pretty significant shift in some conversations that I'm having right now?
Yeah, I mean, even this show is much smaller than it typically is. So there's a lot of companies out there hurting right now, whether they be ancillary providers or service providers or chains or growers or whatever it is. I mean, I think that there, you know, I mean, you remember the internet boom, right? Internet stocks went crazy and everyone, and then it just fell out to the bottom. Well, the internet didn't go away.
Right.
Just the people that didn't have good business models went away.
The bubble burst.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think that you're seeing something like that in cannabis today.
The smoke cloud is evaporating.
Yeah. But there will be another one.
Yeah. Well, cannabis certainly isn't going away, and the consumer base is never going to change. The people who love cannabis are always going to love cannabis.
There will always be a new way to consume it. But I don't see it going. The toothpaste is out of the tube, I like to say. It's not going to go back in. I don't think there's any fear of illegalization. You know, I think it's here it has to be, the business has to be mastered. And I think that there's been a lack of seriousness. You know, I always say this about the industry. The industry is culture, right? And so in order for you to have a business in this business, you have to have a lot of culture in your business. But if you don't have business, if you don't run it like a business, then it doesn't matter how much culture you've got, right? Like, it, you know, there's a yin and yang, but at this point, like, culture has been the pervasive part of the scale, I think, for the first 10, 12 years. I think it's time for business to come in and to really run it as a business. And it still does all the great things, right? But in order to keep people employed and not hand out people their last paychecks, right? You got to get real, real serious about how you run your business, running a tight ship, you know, all that stuff. So I think that's where we're at right now. Strong companies are going to do very, very well during this period of time. There will be a vacuum and it will get filled by people that do that run business well.
Is there a state legal market that you currently look at and can sort of point to and say you think they're getting some or most of it right?
I always thought that Colorado did a good job, right? I mean, and by the way, Colorado has its problems right now. Colorado was built on locals and tourism. And when Colorado, Oregon, and Washington were the only states you could buy cannabis recreationally, then tourism was a big deal. Well, you know, now we've got, you know, 30 some odd states that have got legalized cannabis. So that tourism thing has sort of dissipated. And Colorado, but as far as the rules, the laws, and the way the state handled it, at least originally, you know, when I was a consultant early on, you know, legislators from other states, California specifically, were very interested in how they should write their laws. And I said, don't rewrite the laws. Take Colorado's business model and improve that. Don't rewrite the whole thing. Of course, they rewrote the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's the problem, is that there's every state's got different rules. And some of them are just silly rules, and some of them are just like stupid rules.
And onerous
and prevent you from being successful. And, you know, when you hear about states that are thinking about increasing taxes, that just keeps the black market alive. So, I mean, there needs to be some sensibility and politically and legislatively for the industry to work well. And there's got to be, you know, there's got to be the will to do things correctly. And you can't use cannabis as a tool, right? It is what it is. It's not going anywhere. You should allow businesses to be successful. You've got to pass safe banking, safer banking, or something similar. You've got to either reschedule or legalize federally some way. It doesn't have to be cannabis is legal for the world, but it's got to be. It can't be a class one narcotic.
Yeah, from your lips to the government's ears.
Yeah, yeah, and I talk to as many people as I can about this, it hasn't worked so far, but I'll keep talking.
Well, I think it actually has worked. It just isn't working fast enough for folks who have really been giving a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to the industry. So,
amen.
We'll keep going in the right direction.
Well, you keep doing what's in the industry's. You know, that's the other thing about businesses, is that you can't. You have to run your business well, but you can't work in your own self-interest in this industry. You've got to work in the industry's self-interest, right? You've got to, every business thing that you do has got to be with the intent of forwarding somebody else's cannabis business, right? And if you have that in mind, that I think that's why we've been around as long as we have, is because we don't do things just for us. We do things for our customers, trying to make their business better, them more successful. And I think that pay it forward mentality is what's missing. And I think people need to go to their politicians, and it's a big organization. I mean, it's a big group of people. It's not, you know, 8% of the population. It, you know, it's gotta be in the 30s or 40s. I don't know what the numbers is, but it's a big, big constituency.
Yeah.
At times I feel it's well organized, and other times I feel like people just don't care enough. And that's unfortunate.
That's why it's such a good reminder to vote not only at the federal level, but vote whenever a municipal election is happening.
The city level.
Crucial.
The city level is where it starts, right? Like the cities that are not allowing recreation, but they have med, or like, it's, you know, that battle is over. Whether the politicians know that it's over today, they'll know tomorrow, you know, it's up to the people in the space to convince them.
Where can people learn more about Love Buds?
Well, you can go to our website, www.shoplovebuds.com. You can go to YouTube. We have our own YouTube page called Love Buds University, where we try to engage with bud tenders and customers, teach them about the products, how to sell them, how to upsell things. We're on Learn Brands. We just launched a new program called the Triad with Hoodie and Sparkplug. Just trying to manage inventory inside the dispensaries and then incentivizing bud tenders to sell the category. So we're trying to do those things, trying to help the industry go, make our category, which has been historically about 1.5-2% of their business, and getting up to 10% of the business. So I think there's an opportunity to do that now. So we're going to fight hard to help them get there.
Awesome. And that is LUV Buds, moving forward with Love Buds. Shop Love Buds. Awesome. Thank you, Brett. It was really nice chatting with you. Nice to meet you. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Cannabis Tech Talks, powered by ShopLine in association with ICBC and MJ BizCon. Please hit like and subscribe to this podcast and follow us at Canna Tech Today.